Hey, this is Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are talking about the weekend of Cavs basketball and as well as Dante Exum's fit so far in the first two games. This is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. Let's get after it.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, let's first get into Cavs-Celtics. The Cavs lose that one pretty, convincingly, 129-117. They, I think, to their credit, did kind of win. They won the third quarter after really getting kind of beat down a bit by 15 points in the first half, kept it close in the fourth. Not enough to win, not enough to really make it competitive, but at least I don't think they completely quit in that one. Leading the way, Kevin Love at 30-7. You had Kevin Porter Jr. at 16 off the bench. Jetty Osmond has 10. Darius Garland only has 2 points in this game. And Tristan Collins-Sexton has 21. What for you, when you look at the Boston game, was kind of the standout? What to you was kind of the thing you most took away from that one?
What I most took away from is, I'll admit that I was a little bit in and out of this game just because it was a matinee game and I had some things going on that Friday. But I did notice that Kevin Love and Jason Tatum were having a bit of a shootout. That was a lot of fun to watch. And Kevin Love has been on a bit of a hot streak lately. He didn't play the following game in the back-to-back, but I'm pulling up his individual stats right now as we speak. So, yeah, in the game before that against Atlanta, he had 28-5. And I'm still pulling up the rest of them, just trying to spit here a little bit. And then against Memphis, he had 21-13. Against Charlotte, he had 16-14-7. He's looking a lot sharper out there, especially all things considered. Because at the beginning of the month, especially, it looked like he was phoning it in a little bit just because he was visibly frustrated with how the team was going. So it's a little refreshing to have your best player looked engaged and locked in again. So that's definitely a silver lining that I took from this Boston game is, even though the Cavs weren't really in this for the most part, I just had fun watching the team's best player show out for the 35 minutes he played that night.
I would say for me, I think that's right. I think Love playing well and kind of being assertive was really nice. I think Kevin has a right to be frustrated with how the offense sometimes runs. I think that's a fair critique on his part. Yeah. I don't think that's wrong, especially with the Sexton stuff. I think that's all very fair and kind of very correct. I think when he's more assertive, I do think it's not necessarily like the beeline ball. But I think it's like something like if you're going to like veer from that, that's the way I'd want to do it. I want Kevin to be taking threes, to looking for his own shot, maybe bringing up the ball a little bit more. That's the kind of stuff that I think works for me. I guess that I wrote about this in my game coverage of this one, if you're the sword, but I feel as if like this game kind of was a pretty stark reminder of how badly the Cavs are going to need to hit on wings that are really, really good in the next couple years if they're going to get out of the well. So to look at the two guys I'm really referring to here, it's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, both of whom I think if they're not, you know, guaranteed all-stars should be very much the consideration. Tatum's going to, I think, kind of has the bigger name right now, but I honestly, like, I think Jaylen Brown, I think Brown's kind of been better this year. Brown had 34 in this one, a career high. 5 of 10 from 3, 13-20 overall from the field, had 9 boards, 2 assists, was just kind of got whatever shot he wanted. Then for Tatum, 11-20, 5 of 10 from 3, 5 boards, 2 assists, 2 blocks. They got whatever shots they wanted. The Cavs had no real way to defend them. Even on their possessions where I thought the Cavs defended them well, I felt as if those guys just kind of could slip a screen, could pop out, could attack one-on-one and get whatever look they wanted. Tatum in particular did a really nice job of just creating his own looks with step backs and little drive-ins and stuff to kind of make himself get good looks. And again, I think KPJ had a really, this was probably his better game. I think this was clearly his better game of the week. And I think, I like Jetty. I like some of the guys they have. I think when you just look at the ceiling of those guys, I don't think they're as high as Tatum and of Jaylen. And I think those guys are all-star caliber guys who can play really well and high end on both ends of the floor. Tatum's a much better, I think, become a much better defender. And people that watch him more have told me the same thing. And I think that this game was like, yes, like Kemba, Kemba didn't play well. Gordon Hayward didn't play well. You know, Kanter gave them some good minutes off the bench and it was like 14-9. the big difference was just Tatum and Brown are really good, and the Cavs don't have anyone of that caliber.
No, I totally agree with that, and I think the Cavs are on their three-game win streak coming into this game. Somebody texted me saying, like, wow, Boston's just completely obliterating him at one point. I said, well, they're a top-five defensive team, and I think they're also a top-five offensive team, and I said they're really well coached, and like you said, Brown and Tatum both have a legitimate case to be all-stars this year, and it's just, I guess, I'm like, listen, you have a bunch of 19-year-olds out there trying their best against pretty stellar, two stellar wings, and then a well-coached team around them that this is what you're going to run into. So, yeah, no, KPJ was definitely, this was the better of his two games over the weekend, but Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were definitely impressive, and I mean, if anyone goes through my Twitter history, I rag on them all the time, but you can't deny the fact that they were the best two players on the floor. Besides, I mean, Kevin Love was pretty good too, but on the winning team, at least those were the best two players on the floor throughout the night.
Did anyone else in this? Let's talk about KPJ, because I think this this to me was like, looking through my notes, like he had some really interesting passes. That's kind of come a long way. Was kind of being very assertive and getting his own look, like maybe sometimes a little further than you're maybe looking for. But for him to kind of come in a game where the Cavs like got nothing really from Garland, I thought Sexton was a little bit up and down until later. Tristan and Jetty were fine, but I thought like he was the guy that really kind of came off the bench and was the one providing juice. And for him to like have 16 and 4 assists and 3 boards, like that's as well around. It's not like a triple double watch or anything like that. But for him to come in and like pass like he was, I thought that's like a really interesting sign for me. With him just kind of finding his legs a little bit, and I think that's like a really really positive thing for him.
No, I totally agree with that. It's just we've touched on this before, and I've touched with it with plenty of people. It's just Kevin Porter has been a pleasant surprise every time he's come out. Like, yeah, he'll have his growing pains. He's a rookie, and I mean, he's raw as hell in some aspects. But just like you said, like the 4 assists was every time he has a good assist count, if you want to be frank, he was tied for second on the team in assists during that game with Matthew Dellavedova leading the team with 6. I mean, he tied Kevin Love and Jetty Osmond in terms of starters for assists, but it's just been a lot of fun to watch him just grow and develop out there. And I think the more burn and more time he gets, the more he can learn from his mistakes, because the game against Minnesota wasn't as good as this one, but it's just like these small victories that like help him build momentum that just keep carrying forward to what is turning out to be a really solid rookie year from a guy the Cavs got at 30th overall.
Does that tell you any? I just finished up this game on Love. By the way, what off the top of your head, do you know what Kevin Porter Jr.'s career high single game assists is so far in his career?
I do not. If you want to enlighten me, because
7.
7. Okay.
Which is surprising. I don't remember that. It happened against Brooklyn. That could just be on the 25th of November. He's had 4 assists. Kind of real quick, he's had it 5 times so far in his career. Excuse me. Yeah, 5 times in his career so far. You have a loss to Miami, loss to Orlando, loss to Philly, loss to Toronto, and loss to Boston. 3 of those games have come this month, and they've all, except for one on November 14th, all of them have come, all of his career high assist games have come since the 25th of November, which is basically like the last month. This is, I think that even though like, you know, you could look at the advanced metrics and look at that a little bit more, but I think that's a sign that like that part of his game is actually coming along a little bit.
No, I totally agree. And I think at least when he first started getting minutes off the bench, that was one of the first things I noticed. It wasn't the scoring, because his shot isn't the prettiest and he's still trying to get comfortable playing at the NBA level ball, but he was moving the ball consistently. And I said, okay, well, that's pretty refreshing, because you have Sexton who is struggling to pass at all. And then Garland, who's been honestly up and down his entire rookie campaign. It's just like, this is a nice steady option. And I didn't know he had that. And it's just, I'm just pleasantly surprised every time, because I poo-pooed the pick a lot. I'm just like, okay, well, whatever, because I read all the bad publicity about Kevin Porter Jr. and I bought into it. But then actually being around him and then watching him play, it's just, I've been completely shut up about it. It's just, it's awesome to watch, and I'm definitely surprised that he is moving the ball so well, and more power to you, Kevin. Keep it up.
All right. That's going to be it for our first segment. We're going to talk about a game the Cavs won against the Wolves right after this. We'll be back with more of Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. And I hope after this Brown, now that this disastrous Brown season is done, your top Cleveland podcast. So stay tuned for more. All right, we're back to talk about Cavs Wolves. Just so you know, if you're wondering why haven't we touched on Dante Exum, we're going to talk. I'll do a little kind of quick segment of him about the end. He has played two games with the Cavs now, both off the bench. His debut obviously came in Boston, but he's now kind of fully formed in the rotation. We've seen one tweak that we'll get into that was in the Wolves game kind of to the rotation, I think partially as a result of his arrival and sort of his different skill set, which Evan talked wonderfully about with Ben Dowsett the other day. But this happened to me was a game I'm of two minds of this. Number one, the Cavs win a game I don't think they would have necessarily won last year. Yeah. Number two, they didn't really play well.
Oh, no. Not
this
at all.
Like a bad performance.
This is just a bad, ugly game overall. Because to be fair, Minnesota was missing Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. So that definitely helped Cleveland's chances. And then
the Cavs didn't have Kevin Love.
Exactly. And so those are, well, Towns and Love are two all-star caliber players. And Andrew Wiggins just has a vendetta against Cleveland ever since they traded him. So it's just, it definitely deflated it a little bit, but no, there's a lot of just silver linings throughout the game. Like Tristan Thompson finished the game with 12 and 15. He had four offensive boards. Darius Garland had a great night with 18, 3 and 2, and he had two steals as well. Did have five turnovers, but you'll take whatever you can. And then Colin Sexton had 18 and 7 and rebounds, not assists. I don't want to like blow everyone's mind real quick, but I mean, overall, like, it was just an ugly basketball game. And I think because the Ohio State game was happening at the same time, not a lot of people were watching, but I was paying attention. I'm just like, this is ugly to watch.
It was the ugliest game, I think, a Cavs game I've watched this year. I don't keep like a ranking of that because like a lot of them can be very ugly and like sometimes not very fun. But this one was just like particularly a slog. And I was out at dinner when it first started, came back home, kind of caught up, and then was watching the end of it. And even like the end of the game, like it wasn't like quite the game that eked out like not too long ago. Was it against Memphis? Either Memphis or Atlanta when Jetty kind of like had the air ball three and like committed the turnover like very late in the game. That was either Atlanta or Memphis. My brain's broken, so I don't remember which one that was. But like this game was just like if you just showed someone like the box score. And mm-hmm. like you told them, like a NBA game in 2019, almost 2020, was 94-88. That's yeah. like it's a the equivalent of like an NBA rock fight. That's like really hard to do. And looking at just the numbers, the Cavs had an offensive rating of 92.2 in this one. That's in the overall seventh, like of all teams this year, that's in the bottom 7% of games. That's atrocious. Mm-hmm. They had a 32.4 turnover percentage, which puts them in the literally bottom of all teams' performances this year in the NBA, according to Cleaning the Glass. No one aside from Garland, like I thought, really had like a good efficient night. You know, KPJ didn't play well. You didn't have Kevin to lean on. Colin was a little all over the place. Garland's like for me, like the thing from this game that aside from just like winning the way they did and like winning a game, I don't think they would have won last year. I think the DNA of this team is just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Garland was 8 of 11, 18 points, 3 assists, did have the 5 turnovers, but his shot profile was good. He was assertive. He got in some foul trouble, but like this was as kind of a good as an offensive game as he's had. And I think especially coming off how bad he played in Boston, I like that he was able to just come out and play well the next night. That was kind of cool to see.
No, I totally agree. I touched on this in the last segment. It's just his rookie campaign has been largely up and down for the most part, and I've made the case before with a few people, just whether it's in podcast or writing, it's just he's essentially a high schooler who's still trying to get his feet wet playing with grown men. And just I'm glad he had a solid overall night because it can definitely be frustrating from a fan watching from the outside because you see more often now that Darius Garland, like, oh, they're calling him a bust and all these other things. Like if he has a bad night like he did against Boston and then he has a nice solid bounce back night against this, and I can't complain too much. And I mean, as ugly as it was and as you said statistically as terrible as this game was, a win's a win. And it's actually hard to believe that Cleveland hit 10 wins this early on. I think they didn't hit 10 wins last year until they had 41 losses under their belt. So hey, some positive direction in that way as well. But, you know, just to circle back to Garland, it's just, I'm happy for him that he had a good night. And, yeah, no, hopefully they can build upon it in their next game against Toronto on New Year's Eve. Fingers crossed, because that's a pretty good Raptors team.
Yeah, even without, like, no, I don't know if Pascal Siakam is going to play. I don't, you know, there's certain guys that aren't going to be on there, or mm-hmm. not playing that game. What do you think for you when you look at this Wolves game and you just look at, do you think like that is the case for like Kevin Love, even if he's not, like the on-off numbers say they're a little bit of a negative without him. Do you think like that game is just the case of like he's going to at least provide some level of confidence? Is that that game like the example of that, or is it a little bit of just like they played bad and like the Wolves also had, it was just like a weird game. Do you think not having Love in that one and then playing that bad is proof that at least like he's going to kind of stabilize them in some way? Do you think that's a right assessment?
No, I think it's totally fair. You know, it also might be a good preview of what's to come if Kevin Love is inevitably traded. So, yeah, no, you can even circle back to it last year when Love was out with recovering from surgery on his toe. Cleveland was abysmal, like just unwatchable at some points, like just not fun to watch. And when he came back, it was just like a breath of fresh air that he just raises the floor and makes life a lot easier for these younger guys. And he and Thompson have a really good chemistry, and that always helps. And then it helps Bayline as well, because it just, you know, he doesn't like losing, and having an all-star caliber forward out there on the floor for you definitely helps. But also, we kind of knew this is what was coming. I think early into the season, or maybe even in training camp, they touched base on the fact that it's quote-unquote load management, even though I think they said he was out with his back last night. This is what you have to get ready whenever the Cavs play back-to-backs in these situations. And thankfully, they're able to squeak out a win. But no, just to answer your question, I think obviously Kevin Love makes the team better, but maybe this is also a nice little sample just to give you a taste of what's to come, because Jordan Clarkson is no longer with the team too, and he is such a solid bench scorer. He was such a solid bench scorer for Cleveland that just having both of those guys missing is just like, all right, now we're really going to see some bad basketball. Just a lot of growing pains in bad basketball. So, and hey, yeah, you know, take it when you can. So,
yeah, I think that's about right. Other thing from this game that I thought was notable is that you did see Colin Sexton comes out of the game earlier. He basically gets subbed out, like, I think like Dele comes in for him at about like the 7-ish minute mark, and then he kind of leads a bench unit. That's because of that's largely because I think that what they're going to do with Exum. We'll talk about Exum in the next segment, but did you like that? At least, you know, good. I don't know if we don't have enough data to really know how that's going to work or not, or if it's good or not. Yeah. Do you like that idea?
You know, I'm totally fine with it, because I think you and I are both in the same camp that Sexton will eventually transition to being the team's sixth man. So maybe that gives him a little bit of a free will, because like I said, this weekend was a little bad for me. I was watching this game as much as I could, but you know, that Ohio State game did have my full attention because it's just my family and everything. But I like you said, I applaud the change in rotation, because Dante Exum was also touted a bit as a playmaker when he was first coming into the draft, when he was selected fifth overall. And I think just giving him a little bit extra time to burn with some of the starters, and then eventually transitioned with Dellavedova and all that other stuff, it's just, you got to see what you got with him. And I think pulling Sexton out and keeping Garland in there in terms of spacing as well also helps, because Exum hit one 3-pointer against Boston, but Ben told me that he doesn't have a very good shot and he's not a great shooter. And so, I mean, you need to have a little bit of spacing next to him. And if I had to pick right now, since Colin Sexton can't hit a three to save his life, I'd rather have Garland paired alongside him if we had to just mix and match the rotations and kind of mesh everyone together, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's about right. All right, we're going to take one more break and then come back to talk about Dante Exum, who has made his first couple of Cavs. He's played two games for the Cavs so far. Get into what we've seen from him and sort of how it's met our expectations and whatnot. So we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. Okay, Evan, we're back. Dante Exum, here's his numbers through two games as tabulated by Basketball Reference.
Okay.
15.5 minutes a game. Two games, both neither of them starts. shooting 60% from the field, 50% from three. He's shooting his effective field goal percentage of 65%, which would be a career high by a wide margin. Shooting 66.7% from the line, 1.5 rebounds, half an assist a game, 1.5 steals, turning the ball over 1.5 times a game, 8.5 points. Again, coming off the bench, kind of going to clearly be at least part of that bench unit is for the foreseeable future. What to you has stood out in for Maxim in his first couple games for the Cavs?
Most definitely his perimeter defense. He's big enough to defend 1 through 3, and I think the more comfortable he gets with Cleveland going forward, they'll start utilizing. Hell, they might even start doing 3-point guard sets with him, Garland, and Sexton on the floor. Just to kind of negate the defensive liabilities that you have with playing 2 6-1 point guards at your 1 and 2 spot. But no, it's, I think I said after the the Celtics game, I tweeted, good for Dante Exum, just because he's had a pretty rough career. And Ben and I were talking about it privately. He's just, you know, kind of fallen out of favor with Quinn Snyder a little bit. And was getting a lot of DNP coaches' decisions and everything. And just like, I'm sure that has an effect on your confidence. And for him to go out there and just not blow anyone away, because I didn't expect that coming into Cleveland, but just be solid overall and just competent. I mean, as bad as that, or as lame as that sounds, I think having a competent player come off the bench for the Cavs right now is what you need. And it's just, I'm excited to see. Maybe more intrigued than excited to see where things go. Just because right now he could be arguably one of Cleveland's best perimeter defenders. And if he keeps it up, I'm more than happy to see where things go. And just, it just adds another wrinkle, at least defensively, to help negate some of Cleveland's problems. I mean, obviously the offensive loss from Clarkson is pretty severe, but there's a little bit of give and take, and maybe you can get a bit of more of a scoring punch out of Sexton and Garland that way. And even KPJ as well, but it's definitely interesting to see, and I'm pleasantly surprised that just like solid overall that he's looked. It's just, I mean, like he's not going to blow you away, but great for a bench guard. And that's all you could really ask for if he's going to be a serious part of the rotation going forward.
Yeah. I think the dip, there's going to be a dip offensively, right? Like, I don't think he's going to shoot as well as he has from three in particular. I don't think that's going to be a thing that lasts. I thought his first basket was a really nice indicator of his athleticism because he was going up the right side of the floor. Love hits him like in stride, and then he just kind of glided to the basket. Mm-hmm. The dude's a really good athlete. I think that's, you know, I think that's maybe one of the, that's something that was like a knock on him from some of the folks I talked to about what he was in Utah, but he's still a very good athlete that can be developed in some way. I think the defensive stuff is real. I like that. You know, he's not going to, I think, again, be like a lockdown guy, but I thought he'd like, I'd like that they can throw out these lineups now where like, I feel like they have more competent defenders, and it's a bench lineup. It's like Sexton, who I think has been better on defense this year, Exum, Delly, you know, KPJ, I think at least fights an end. Nance, I think, is a decent defender. Henson obviously can protect the rim pretty well. You can like get some stops, I think, with that unit, which wasn't the case before with Clarkson and some of those lineups they're running before. I wonder, and some of this could be offensive, not being totally familiar with the offense. Some of that could be, you know, not being totally acclimated with teammates. I think that would be kind of the thing. But I would say, like, as his shooting dips, I would look for his assists to go up. His career high is 3.1. That was in a season where he played 14 games. He's never averaged, you know, more than in a full season when he's played a bunch. He's never averaged more than like 2.4 assists. That's what he did as a rookie in about 20 minutes a game. But if he can like get up to that and elite, maybe pick up some secondary assists, he's going to really, I think, fit well in that second unit. And I think it makes him a good, I think it makes him a good complement with Colin Sexton on that second unit.
No, I totally agree with that. It's like, he's a good foil to Sexton because he's everything Colin isn't. Colin's scoring and doesn't move the ball. And he, like you said, he's improved defensively, but he's not by any means a world beater on that end. Like, I think the Patrick Beverley comparisons for him coming out of college were lazy ones. And I think that's definitely being, I mean, he's also just, he's a sophomore player, so you can't expect him to be all defense immediately. But no, Exum's just a good counterbalance to, maybe it's not the same thing, but it's kind of like when you had Isaiah Thomas and that Avery Bradley played with each other. Avery Bradley wasn't going to blow you away, but he covered a lot of the defensive deficiencies of Thomas, and I think those two will complement each other well. And like you said, he averaged 3.1 assists in for the 2017-2018 season for the Jazz. Granted, that was only in 14 games, but that's definitely something to take into consideration that he can move the ball, and that's something that's been really awesome, really, with the second unit with at the time when it was Garland, Dellavedova, Porter, Nance, and Henson. Like, they move the ball really well, and if you throw Exum into that, and like you said, that elevates Cleveland defensively, and it also probably helps their playmaking as well, just to maybe make the transition and make just things a lot easier for the Cavs going forward, which is having those kind of wrinkles just helps long-term with the development for a team this young overall.
Would you like to see Exum get, would you think 15 minutes is good for him? Or I think that Beilein said like it could be as like high as 20 and stuff like that, but do you think he will, would you like to see him get up closer to like 20 or something like that?
I think 20 in the end would be awesome. It's just, you have to look at it this way. Brandon Knight's not cracking the rotation probably ever again.
No, Brandon Knight is, I just want to say salute to the Cavs for being like, he's been great in camp. We're going to like play him and like try to like boost that trade value in training camp before he's just like sent to the end of the bench. Like, salute to the Cavs for like trying to like float out there that he was available for a first round pick and like was killing it in training camp. Like, salute. That's just good work on their part. Like, good effort, good try.
Yeah, exactly. But so just to keep, derailed me a little bit, but Brandon Knight's definitely not cracking the rotation with Exum in town. Now, if you look at it this way, Dellavedova does shoot worse than Exum at this point, and so I can see him eating into his minutes a little bit. And then you have to consider the following, that Dylan Windler will come back eventually. I know I keep saying that and everyone keeps saying that, but he will come play for Cleveland eventually, and I think having Exum there as just kind of a solid overall rotation guard helps that, and the fact that where's Windler going to get minutes from? And I'm feeling, as much as Beilein likes Delly, I think he's going to be on the chopping block because Cleveland's clearly in a renaissance. I don't want to say rebuild.
I'll say it. They're in a rebuild.
Okay, they're in a rebuild, and I will. But why not just give the young guys more burn and let these veterans just kind of be mentors and guides during practice and situations like that, because there might be a trade market for Dellavedova as well, and if he's one of the next players that's shipped off just because of his expiring contract, might as well have Exum feeling more comfortable leading the bench unit as the one of the first guards off the bench, other than, I mean, KPJ is playing mostly small forward at this point, but you know what I mean. So, no, I think 15 minutes for now is fine, but 20 minutes at most is definitely realistic, and the more comfortable he is in this offensive system, and then as comfortable as he is defensively playing alongside everyone else in Cleveland's roster, 20 minutes is definitely attainable, and it just creates a bit more wrinkles and situations. Like I said, you can do a 3-point guard set where you could plug Exum in at the three, and because he just has the size to defend a three.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But yeah,
I would like to, who would you like to see him play with more, KPJ or Jetty?
Probably KPJ, because I'm really bullish on Kevin Porter. That's the problem. Like, Jetty Osman, I was really bullish on last year, and I blame Cavs Twitter for this, but I feel like everyone's just given up on their old son and found their new son. But KPJ is just a lot of fun to watch, and I think Jetty is a decent enough playmaker as well, like KPJ, but he has those hot and cold stretches sometimes where it just like it can feel absolutely brutal. But I don't know. I think I want to see more of the potential of what's going to happen going forward, because maybe Kevin Porter could be a starting player for Cleveland long-term. Who knows? But more burn with him. And then if you have him playing with somebody who's a competent playmaker like Exum, who's just a solid overall player, defensively is solid as well. Because Jetty also isn't a world beater defensively. I think I'd rather see Kevin Porter going forward. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Jetty, they could provide some of the same like passing energy. So I there's certainly, I think, an argument to be made that like the way to do this is to put him in the situations with the guys that aren't going to necessarily pass as much. KPJ, even if he's doing more of the passing stuff, still kind of his best skill. So I think that's kind of the right way to do it. Okay, Evan, any final thoughts as we wrap up our kind of return on this Monday?
No, just, you know, I hope everyone had a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays all together. Cleveland is back New Year's Eve, so be safe if you're going out and might watch the game, or if you're going out and watching the game, still stay safe. But definitely excited to see what 2020 holds for Cleveland. It's probably going to get a lot uglier when more people get shipped out, but at least all the young players here make it intriguing for the future going forward. And like you said earlier, the Browns are done, like a done. So let's keep boosting those numbers, folks. Let's get us to be the number one Cleveland podcast before by the time 2020 is officially underway. So let's do that.
Look, the Cavs are the most interesting team in Cleveland right now. Hop on the bandwagon, follow along with us. They're more fun than the Indians could trade Francisco Lindor and be just very frustrating. The Browns are the Browns. So join us, follow along with this Cavs team. We're back tomorrow. We're going to do 2020 resolutions, 3 from me, 3 from Evan, on tomorrow's show. And thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you then.